junk store. And that's sort of, you know, I'm young. That's not what I had in mind. I had an idealized view and everything would be perfect. And he's getting stuff from the junk store, which doesn't match and is old. And so I remember this very well. So we spent the day trying to get his apartment pulled together. Now, he came home from Vietnam with a very high-end, for that time, stereo system. I forget all the details, but it was high-end. But the soldiers can get it for very little money from the PX. So I'm hungry. I'm disappointed. I'm really feeling miserable because this is what we're going to live in the middle of a junkyard. We bought a chicken from the grocery store and a bottle of wine and probably some potatoes. So I'm in the kitchen trying to make dinner. And soon the kitchen has the smell of chicken coming out of the oven. And Dennis, in the meantime, has set up his stereo and there's beautiful music. And so suddenly my spirits are lifted and I see it, the whole poverty thing, in a different light. And we never really got good looking stuff, but the apartment ended up being quite interesting. He bought, I don't know, 200 carpet scraps. This would be from a carpet store. Sometimes they're samples, rectangles, and sometimes they're pieces that came off a job. And he sewed them together. And so our living room was wall to wall, but it was literally sewn together, pieces, odd pieces. And it was an amazing look of different naps. Sometimes you'd have shag and sometimes you didn't, and then the colors, but it was remarkable and it made our place special. So we had Jim. He was born in 71. So as I said, he was city editor of the daily newspaper, and it was part of the Gannett chain, which is pretty famous now and was rising up. And he began to feel that the organization was not paying the reporters enough to get good work. And he saw some of the sort of, what would be the word, but a seasoned journalist who were drunks and their marriages had failed. So he didn't think he wanted to continue to be a journalist. So he thought he would want to write novels. Okay, so let's do that. I'm a nurse. I can bring in an income. Well, do you want to rent some more? No, we didn't want to rent. We wanted to buy a house. Okay, so let's buy a house, which is a chunk of money. And where will we go? Okay, well, I would like to go to a teaching hospital. And I think I briefly spoke about that the other day with you. So from Rockland County, this is pre-internet. We got this book that looks like the yellow pages of teaching hospitals in the United States. And we looked, and we looked around for all of the teaching hospitals within a reasonable radius of New York City, because, as I said, I'm still in college when I'm married. So all of my siblings, and Dennis loved my parents, and he was like an older son to them, so he didn't want to be too far. So, as I said, we looked at teaching hospitals, and we ended up in Cooperstown. And my husband was not one to break laws or break rules, but as a signal of how attractive we found Cooperstown, we came in the summer, I think, or spring. It was spring because there were these little wooden slats over bushes in people's yards, and I had never seen them before, because in the city you don't get that much snow, but up here you do, and so people protect their tender bushes with these little tents of wood. So it was late spring because they were still up, and I had to ask what they were. But it was a lovely, lovely day. I had the interview. Dennis sat out on the lawn. I know exactly the spot with our little son. And maybe we're heading back. We're going to head back. And he says, well, what if we just stay overnight, which was not our plan. And so essentially we played hooky. Maybe it was, I can't remember, but instead of going to work, both of us, we stayed another day. I think we rented bikes and took a ride around. So that's how attractive Cooperstown was. Okay, so I apply, I get a job. And I started on September 10th in 1973. And my salary was $4.40 an hour, 1973. And I'm not a brand new graduate. I have 2 years of experience. It's not a lot. But it was, I'm sure, standard for the rural area. New York City was not paying that, because Nyack Hospital, where I came from, I was making probably twice or two and a half times that. So this was a big change. But we bought this handyman special for $19,500, which is not very much even then. And the place was shabby. My parents helped us move in, and my mother wept and at the look of it. And we were naive. We had arranged for this rented truck on these particular dates that fit into work schedules. And if we had been smarter, we would have turned around at the door, because a house that is supposed to be broom clean, I think, broom swept clean, doesn't have to be polished. And there was chunk all over. There were dirty diapers in the garbage with flies buzzing around. There were chicken bones in the stove, you know, not the smooth top, but so my mother was so upset. And we just had we had no time to say to the realtor, "Hey, get this cleaned up. We'll be back in 2 days." We couldn't do that, so we cleaned it up ourselves, and my mother was so upset. So little by little, my husband used his contracting skill. I mean, he was, I guess I never told you about that, but when he was in high school and college, he worked for the next door neighbor who was a contractor, and so he knew what to do with a hammer, and he just got really, really good at fixing the house little by little and righting it, because it wasn't at right angles. It was a great house. I've been back in it in the past 18 months, and it was quite nostalgic for me to be back in that place. It wasn't perfect, but we were there for nine years. So we had a second son there, and then our third son was born our first son was born at New York Hospital, because we were living in Rockland County, so we just went down to the city, but our second and third son were born here in Cooperstown. So you asked me about the hospital, I think. Okay, all right, so my first job was on a unit that was medical and surgical, and I was very inexperienced, but I know how to ask a question, and little by little, I got more skillful. And then if you have a fairly good reputation and you're a reasonable person and you make a good request, you can apply to go elsewhere. So soon I felt I wanted to be an obstetrical nurse. And so I moved to the obstetrical unit and learned that practice. And I was there when there was this change in the model called family-centered birthing practice. So when I was a young kid and my mom was having babies, Dad was not there. He came home to take care of us, but he wasn't welcome in the delivery room. And things were probably different when your parents had you, and your dad might have been there, which is quite standard now. So this was moving in to the birthing center, or what we called the obstetric unit. So it was fun for me to welcome the dads and the little kids. Even there was little visitation, they wore little hospital gowns, and so I loved that. And I loved helping women recognize that being pregnant was not an illness. You know, it was an altered physiologic state, and I loved the normalcy of the norm. And then I was pregnant myself on the obstetrical unit, and I loved being a good example of a healthy, hardworking, not a delicate flower. And I love the teaching opportunity to get families engaged. And here's I talked to you about not being normal, right? So here's a funny story on me. When I was younger and less wise, I had the idea that boys and girls were born sort of neutral, and it was the culture that feminized or masculinized them, and I didn't think that was right. So there was a tradition of putting pink blankets on all the baby girls and blue blankets on all the baby boys. And I thought, I was assigned to the nursery one day, and I had the idea I was going to shake this up a little bit. So I altered the colors of the blankets. And so at that time, the babies were staying in the nursery, and then you got them. Sometimes we even fed them to give mom a rest, and changed them and got them ready for the doctor to examine, and then bundled them up in these little plastic rolling carriages and then brought them to the mom. Well, not only did the parents object to what I had done, but so did my nurse colleagues. They thought I was quite radical, and they scolded me. So I never did it again. I'm smarter now, I think, and I recognize that it's not that way. I think that our children, our little infants, are born with some pre-programming, actually. But it was just a funny mistake on my part, but I was bold enough to make that terrible mistake. So I stay in the obstetrical unit, and I really love the idea of a midwife. I love, because that's a nursing practice, and here you have this opportunity to be with women in labor. It's so intimate, and it's so enduring, because it lasts a long time. And so the chief of OB at the time was Dr. Barnes, and I said to Dr. Barnes, I had this little proposal, Dr. Barnes, I'd like to be a midwife here. And if you send me away and train me to be a midwife, I'll come back and work for you forever. And he said, there'll never be a nurse midwife here. Okay, I'm back in my place, you know. Well, fast forward, the teaching hospital, right, they have to meet some standards. So the obstetrical experience for medical students or resident physicians was a certain number of deliveries, at least, among many other characteristics. And our numbers of births dropped below that threshold. So the obstetrical department at Cooperstown could no longer have medical students or medical residents deliver the babies. And so suddenly the obstetricians are coming in middle of the night to deliver babies. So suddenly midwives are like sliced bread. They're that good. And it's just a funny story. Again, I was ahead of my time. And for a long time, there was this wonderful midwife practice that was very collaborative and wonderful for birthing moms. I'm thinking of another example of what of my not being normal was in 1970 when we were married. Everything was white for the bride, and I didn't do that. I went for a bouquet of multicolored flowers, and instead of a veil, I had a very short veil, but I had a wreath of the same multicolored flowers. And I'm so glad to just do things a little bit unusually, and I didn't go with the standard sort of wedding shtick. Dennis and I made the bread that we made the communion wafers that were used there. We made our own vows, and the reception was in a nursing home, believe it or not. I had worked in this nursing home when I was in high school, close to my parents' home, and they had an auditorium, and they were very willing to let us use it. They were delighted I was getting married and all that stuff. So as I look back, I love the fact that I've been a little bit abnormal, a little bit off the beaten path. Sometimes it's been nutty, like this experiment with the changed blanket colors. But I'm sort of proud of that a different route that I take sometimes. I still do on occasion. So when I couldn't be an obstetrical nurse, I couldn't be a midwife. I continued there. I had our second baby, and then the rotation, which was pretty standard in the obstetrical unit, was hard on me. And so I thought, I'll do anything for a Monday through Friday job. And then a Monday through Friday job opened up that was a cancer program nurse with a particular focus on breast cancer. There was a grant that our hospital, the cancer surgeon, got. And so that was the beginning of a wonderful career I had in cancer nursing that I loved, and maybe was my best, the best time. I just loved learning, and I grew as a professional, collaborative practice with the doctors, and I sort of pushed the borders a little bit there in lots of different ways, and from cancer nursing, I began to make presentations at national meetings by submitting an abstract and getting it accepted, and speaking before a national audience, you know, with 2,000 people in the, and so I grew a lot in those rather independent roles, and I think I mentioned to you about discharge. I think the discharge planning program came after the cancer, right? Because I might have mentioned the reimbursement system changed, and that made me think about nursing being very much a part of how the hospital could survive in this different environment. So I moved to what's called the discharge planning program, or I changed the name to continuing care, and I loved that too. I did that for about 9 years, and then the hospital was enfolding these small rural hospitals, and I asked, there was an opening in the hospital in Cobleskill, and I went over there as a chief nurse. And that was another learning experience for me, to be in a chief nurse position in a small rural hospital that was struggling. And I learned a lot. My mom and dad retired and came to the village, and my mom had a stroke. And so it seemed that it was time for me to come back to Cooperstown. I missed Cooperstown, the hospital here. So I got a job back in the hospital as a nurse manager of 2 units, which was very, very challenging. There were about 70 employees under me. And I liked that work. I liked everything I've done. I've just been very fortunate. And when I was done doing that, there was a new position offered to me by the nursing vice president that was brand new and would be responsible for professional practice. And so in my view, the job was like 3 feet wide, and you can't do 3 feet wide of work in 40 hours a week. And so what I could do, I did, was the stuff that I liked to do or that I judged was the most valuable. And so I loved that. It was lifting up nursing and promoting professional practice and something called shared governance, so that the data show that when nurses have a voice in their practice, that patient outcomes are better because nurses are more satisfied. So anything that lifted up professional practice was my job. And so I retired from there. That was my career.
Okay. You touch on your interest in women's issues a little bit and what you've talked about. How did that shape your participation in advocacy organizations?
Well, nurses are largely women, and I think somewhere in my growth as a professional registered nurse, I saw over and over where nurses were second-class citizens. It was not too much before I got to Cooperstown, and this was true all over healthcare, that nurses stood when the doctors entered the nurses' station. Whether they stood in respect, or like you would stand up if the Queen of England came, or the Pope, or the President, or they gave the doctors their chairs, and I thought, oh. And I saw episodes of nurses being put down. So I think I was an early adopter of the women's movement to lift up nursing, and sorry, to lift up women in the same way that I wanted to lift up nursing, because in fact, most of nurses are women. Boy, the last I checked, about 5% of nurses were men. I think that's higher now. I hope it is, because it should be 50-50, just like our nation, you know. So I haven't been like a radical activist about it, but I have been attentive to issues where women don't take the opportunity to step up. And I guess it was mostly within my nursing profession, because I mentioned about my growth and nobody invited it, but I looked for opportunities to present nursing. And it happened to be that I was almost the, not the vector, but I was the individual to do it, like presenting at a national meeting. So, anybody got any problem with my submitting an abstract? And of course, then I had to do all the work, which was vexing and then scary. This was a big national, it was the Oncology Nursing Society. And they recorded the talks. And you could actually get a copy. And I was very eager to get the copy of my first presentation. And when I first listened to it, I thought, oh, there's something wrong with this tape because it was all wobbly. I thought it was the tape's fault. It was me. I was that nervous, but I just felt that if I could make a path for nurses to use all the potential of their wisdom and intelligence and their science and their practice, then it would be better for nurses behind me. So I've always loved doing that, sometimes in a scary way. I was practicing with two oncologists, there were several oncologists, but we had a relationship with a hospital and a practice group in Sullivan County, pretty far down. And they were invited for the day to do something there. I don't know what prompted me, but I said, well, can I come? And could you work it out that I could speak to the nurses? I don't know that they were really hearty in terms of support, but I put myself out there and I said, So I went along with them and they had arranged for nurses. And so then there was this opportunity to make a presentation and be recorded. And it was the middle of it was the end of the day, and even the person who had set up the recording thing left. So I'm talking to an empty room. She left because it was the end of the day or something, not because I bored her to tears, but that's how unrobust the response was. So my own physician colleagues were not robust in their support of me doing it. But I pushed forward, and then, of course, this embarrassing thing happened that they were eager to have me do it and record it, but not eager enough to stay and listen. So, as I said, so advocacy. So I think beyond nursing, I can't identify women's advocacy that I have been active in, particularly in the community. I mentioned that in my retirement, of course, it's easier, but I was an usher for the opera even while I was working and had a family. But there was some constraints that made it a little bit difficult. So when I stopped, and then when I retired, I said, well, do you still have these restraints? And they said, no. All you have to do is, it was very easy. So I'm an usher. So I'm involved in the community, and I sort of didn't want it, my retirement or my contributed hours of time, talent, and treasure to be willy-nilly. And I actually made a graph, and to my amazement and my satisfaction, I found, okay, there's some themes that I find myself willing and able to contribute to. One is spiritual, so it's the church. I'll work on church-related things, and food pantry I put underneath that, feeding the hungry, so to speak. I am in a program at the hospital that is not very active called No One Dies Alone. So if there's an individual who is close to death and there's no family, a volunteer will come and sit with that individual. And I'm particularly capable of doing it. I'm a nurse. I'm pretty comfortable with death, the naturalness of that, and I don't live too far, so sometimes I'll be willing to do a 2 in the morning till 4 in the morning shift. So maybe there's some other things under spiritual. But then the environment, I contribute my time and energy on environmental issues. And then the arts. So the Usher and I'm a member of the Fenimore and the Farmers Museum and a member of the Art Association and contribute and go to the event. So I was happy to see that there was some thematic what shall I call them? Chapters, or not chapters, but roofs under which my time was spent. So I'm happy about that.
Okay. I'm just going to ask you one more question to wrap up the interview. Could you talk a little bit about your participation with the League for Women Voters?
Yes. That happened when I was still living in Cherry Valley. So we left Cherry Valley in 1982, so it was pre-82, and it was the recycling. The local league in Cooperstown, I didn't know much about the League of Women Voters. My mother was not a member. I didn't know about it as I grew up. But their recycling activities were very appealing to me because we were living close to nature. We had a garden, and I found it very appealing to save the earth, to do the right thing. So I reached out and I became a member. So it must have been pre-1982, which is a long time. And I was a member. And with the league, I remember someone saying to me that you can be a member and active sometimes when something happens and you have this high moment of activity and then you're not very active and then something else will happen that hits your brain as interesting. So I don't remember much more except my engagement in the recycling effort. And there were maybe 100 members. Again, I wasn't in any leadership position, so I wasn't paying rapt attention. And then I guess I was on a nominating committee for several years. And the action there was to go to someone's house. The chair of the nominating committee hosted us, and we thought about who we could nominate, and we made calls. Hey, would you be willing to be a nominee for this position? And so we worked and worked and worked for several years, and then we couldn't get anybody to do it. And so the membership waned, and interest commitment to the leadership positions waned. And by that time, I was a pretty seasoned professional and known in the community, I guess, for just, you know, having been around kids at school. You get to know people. And so there was this